9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Go Plug Yourself podcast. On this week's episode, Lawrence and I play host to Dan Karen. Dan Karen is one half of the comedy outfit you may have heard of, you should have heard of, called Ladies and Gentlemen, who are doing a bit of a reunion tour. That's Dan's duo with Chris Sandiford. And yeah, they were just performing in San Francisco. And they're going to be back in Montreal on April 2nd at Theatre St. Catherine, so you definitely want to get tickets to that. I think it's going to sell out. I don't care. On this show, Dan, we talk about wrestling, we talk about watching television, we talk about Star Wars, we talk about, you know, the news of the Just for Laughs Festival no longer being a festival that is happening in Montreal, or at least not for this year. And then we kind of talk about sort of, I guess, the state of comedy in the city, and not just in the city, but what it means to be a comedian. It's a good chat, and then he has some amazing answers for 5 questions. So sit back, relax, enjoy the show, and go plug yourself, everybody.
2, 1, hit it.
Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Podcast.
Mm-hmm. This is the show now.
And then
right into the show.
Started. Getting back to wrestling was like, you know, March or maybe April 2020, pandemic style.
Oh, perfect
style,
time. And I feel there's so many people that grabbed into the pandemic because you're just sort of like, hey, there's these shows that are somehow still happening. I don't understand why.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah,
but you're like, there's new content coming out 2 or 3 times a week from these 2 companies when everything else has come to a complete standstill. And I don't know how I felt about it, their own safety as performers, but it was still new content for me.
Yeah, I know. That was wild. But all that to say, you know what I love? There was still the remnants of Mandy Rose and Otis and their unlikely relationship.
Oh, yeah.
I loved.
Do you know what happened to her? She ended up getting fired from the company because they figured out she had an OnlyFans, and apparently it was like...
And then I'm sure her OnlyFans popped
exploded,
off.
Exploded.
Yeah.
So did you watch the unlikely romance? Because it wasn't necessarily... I don't know if it was... They didn't play it super hard romance. Was... Why am I blanking on her name? Alexa Bliss and Braun Strowman. I liked them as a duo.
No, that was not a romance.
No,
that was like a friendship that had like a weird subtext.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I said they didn't go full romance, but I liked that relationship.
Sure, but that they used to do. They did like a
comedy
tournament.
When he was showing her, like he's like, "Here's how you flip a car."
Yeah.
And then like he like flips a car, and she's like, "Huh?" He's
and
like,
she's
"Put
like,
your back."
And she's like 4'11"
or
whatever.
Exactly,
yeah.
That was
See,
great.
I was not watching at the time, but I heard nobody liked the whole. Oh my God! What's his name? Not Miro. What was his name? Rusev and Bobby Lashley.
They had a love triangle with Rusev's real life wife.
There was a cucking angle going on.
That's what it was. That was the word I was searching.
Not
for.
Even their first cucking angle.
Or
they had a different
their
one
last.
With Mike Bennett and fucking.
Or their last.
Maria
like they're
Canales.
Kind of. I don't understand what his deal is on AEW, but like he's. The storyline that whenever he pops up does seem to be...
Revolving around his wife,
even when she wasn't on the company.
Yes.
And then when she was with the company, like, his last match was him beating up someone, Andrade, right?
But was like, that what it was about?
I think that was... Exactly, yeah, that's it, because she was, like, hanging out with Andrade. But then she was, like, pleased that he, like... He,
I don't know.
She was pleased. Mm. Like, it was as though, like, he's like, I'm going to let you believe... that I'm cheating on you with this other man because that'll get you into a headspace as a fighter to beat him. Like they were kind of trying to like pitch that as
that's
a weird angle, and I was
that's
like,
weird.
And I was like
that's that Napoleon movie that just came out. That's what that's about.
Is it?
Is it actually?
Yeah. She's like, well, I'll grab your balls, but then I'll let go. Go fight that war,
that,
Napoleon.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but now I have to.
That's maybe not the best review of that movie.
No, that's the only review I want.
Now
I don't.
That I
I'm not watching Siskel and Ebert. I want the Daniel Caron review.
Yeah, we just watched Oppenheimer. Just in time for the Oscars. I was like, I hope this wins. It's good. I like it. And then it won a bunch. So I was like, I'm a pretty big cinephile now, I guess, because I watched the one movie that swept the Oscars.
I mean, this is so silly, but is it the picture of the year, in your opinion?
I think so. I can't imagine anything that I've seen was as good as that. It was like a...
Yeah.
Did you watch the other nominees?
I did not.
So then how did you...
I'm just saying. I said anything that I've seen.
If you didn't watch Poor Things, Zone of Interest...
I know the deal about Poor Thing. I see Barbie. Lies. I did see Barbie.
Right. Everywhere.
I did Barbenheimer 6 months apart.
Okay. As it was meant to be enjoyed,
As it was meant to be watched.
I think Oppenheimer really benefited for the fact that it got released near Barbie. And I think that
it's
so much more than Barbie benefiting from Oppenheimer.
No, because I think people would have gone to Barbie anyway, but completely. I think Oppenheimer would have been maybe lost in the shuffle of the summer movies.
It's nonsensical from a traditional Hollywood pitch that a 3-hour movie about math would gross nearly $1 billion. It grossed like it was Inception.
If you're a big movie buff, that cast is really something, right? And I think Chris Nolan.
But Chris Nolan doesn't do those numbers.
Because Scorsese's he's bitching about the Marvel movies and all his movies are 5-hour long and shit. And he goes, and they told him, hey, your movies are too long. He goes, what do you think about having 5 1-hour Netflix episodes? And I was like, you dummy, I'm fucking going to hit pause and go take a shit and then eat something and then go talk to my wife. I'm not sitting there.
I'll propose this. If your runtime is over 2.5 hours.
Intermission. You should have a fucking 15-minute intermission.
Bring
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves a snack.
I saw The Hateful Eight screened on film.
Me too.
And there's an intermission, and I loved it. Yeah. There's an intermission because they have to literally change
the
reel.
Films. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And I was like, how refreshing.
They did that with Titanic too. One of the first times when it came out on film too, right?
Maybe if some of the films are, I saw Titanic straight, but I think that probably some. It's old enough that I feel some theaters were probably
definitely had on film.
Probably had to switch. I know it released that way on VHS.
I was about to say.
Oh, the VHS had the two. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The most
end
famous.
Of part one.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's it. Well, and Hateful Eight had that weird little, there's, a 30-second, not 30-second, but there's a brief recap post-intermission, which is, not a part of the movie, unless you saw it. There's, a brief voiceover. He's like,
whoa.
Yeah, yeah, it's super weird.
I don't remember that.
He's like, this guy is this, this guy's this, this guy, there's a voiceover, whatever, and he's like, now you're all caught up. And then it starts the scene up again, and I was like,
Oh, yeah, and it's Quentin Tarantino is the narrator, isn't
it?
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. That's weird. But
yeah,
but
great. I was like, I love this.
Nepotism, am I right?
Tell me about it.
Is Tarantino a nepo kid?
No, well, I mean, putting himself in all his movies is. Yeah.
Well, I guess is that nepotism?
Yes, you put yourself in your movies. Who's making
was
that decision?
Exclusively related.
Nepo, comma baby.
Yeah, baby.
That's what that is. You know what my favorite, or maybe not even favorite, but if we're talking movies, the best movie that lost an Oscar yesterday was whenever this is coming out, that Across the Spider-Verse, man.
I thought that was so
beautiful. I laughed. I cried. I
love
was so
that movie.
Moved.
Ev had it on
color,
her ballot.
The use of all these things. It's like,
so
this
apparently,
is a movie.
It lost to a Miyazaki film, which I haven't seen, but I was kind of like, okay, if it's going to lose to anyone.
Sure.
It's not like some random thing.
Apparently.
Absolutely.
And it already won.
The first one won Best Animated. Apparently that movie was awful to make for the actual animators.
It was
horror.
It was a nightmare because what's his name?
I loved it. I loved it so much. I saw it in theater. I saw it with Walter and Walter's kid and my wife.
But do you know why apparently it was so awful to make?
Why?
It's the director, Phil
Lord.
Actually the director, but the creative
the creative force or whatever of it. Apparently demanded to see fully rendered scenes and then provided notes on those.
Oh no.
Which is not how that kind of that level of animation was so much they're like, we could do it in wireframe for you, and he's like, no.
I need to see it.
How else will I know if it looks good? And you're like,
Yeah.
Apparently it was just sort of deliver me monstrously complex things in their entirety and then be like, but what if the camera's lower and all that stuff?
Yeah.
And it's it's not just as simple as moving the camera through a 3D space. That's not how rendering and stuff works. I talked to a buddy of mine who didn't work on Spider-Verse but has worked on a number of big Hollywood films and whatever that one of the 3D studios in the city. And he's like, when he read that article, he's like, nobody does that. That's not how.
Sure.
That's not how VFX are ever demanded. So deliver me a finished product. Here's my notes.
Yeah.
Deliver like, me another finished product. Like, what, tomorrow?
No. That's like a director being like, you have to edit this shot and then put sound and then do Foley and then I'm going to make you
reshoot. Yeah,
it.
And then
like,
be like,
insane.
Yeah, no.
Which is kind of what they did and why they got fired from Solo. Because they were like, hey, look, let's improvise, let's experiment. This is like a $300 million movie, but we'll do a couple of throwaway scenes.
Have fun.
You know what's
and
crazy
they were
about
like, you
Solo?
You can't do this with our multi-million dollar
I
movie.
I was so disappointed by that movie.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed by that movie. Because you know
what? Like, of the disappointing Star Wars movies, it's the most disappointing.
That's fair.
I might disagree because I think that Rise of Skywalker was the most disappointing.
Ooh,
but Solo.
No,
because
for
good.
Me, but the Rise of Skywalker wasn't as disappointing because my expectations were tempered by how mediocre the first two were.
Yeah. Right.
So for me, I didn't. But Solo, I was
and
like,
then Solo
a standalone.
Came out right
like,
before
like,
Rise
yeah,
of Skywalker.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Solo's a standalone. It's not going to have the stink of these two movies. I was like, oh my God.
Rise of Skywalker,
me,
I was going to say. Rise of Skywalker, though, swings so hard that I was, like, laughing and clapping at the end. Where I was like, when he's like, 10 million Star Destroyers and whatever. And I was like, hee-hee-hee. Like, it went so far back that I started enjoying it as, a B film of just, like, what nonsense is going to happen next? Rey and Kylo are like, let's kiss. And you're like, no one's been expecting that, but let's do it. Like,
Kylo stuff
the third
crazy.
Act of... The third act of Last Skywalker had swung so far,
atrocious.
Like got so bad it's good for me in theaters. I was like, I was laughing and like enjoying myself tremendously by the end of Rise of Skywalker.
The first date I ever had with my wife, we really bonded over how much we enjoyed Rogue One.
Rogue One's amazing.
Rogue One is maybe my favorite Star Wars film, and Andor is incredible. Mm-hmm. Just from even if you're not a Star Wars fan, you should watch Andor. And for me. Rise of the Skywalker just like broke a promise on what the franchise could be, and Solo I felt when that was right before I was like, this is gonna be fucking good because this is an all-time great character.
Mm-hmm.
Prequels are never great, but there's so much mystery and so much intrigue about this character. We know nothing about him, and you don't necessarily have to reveal all these things about him. You could just have a captivating story, and then the movie was like, this is how he met Chewie. This is how he got the Millennium Falcon. This is how he did everything. This is how he got the dice.
This is how
I was like,
he nicknamed Chewie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
I'm like
you can only
no,
assume
like,
from
the,
Chewbacca.
The part that I felt betrayed about was you were like, as a kid.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford, Han Solo, and you're like, oh, there's all these little, like you said, like little like seasonings, being like, he's got this Wookiee, but Wookiees are super scary, but he like loves this guy.
Yeah.
Oh man, he knows Lando, and like he lost the Millennium Falcon in a bet. What the hell is a Kessel Run?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
You have all of this stuff. You're like,
and
what
then,
a cool
and
guy.
Then
and you're
the
like,
movie's
turned
like, we're
out
gonna do all of it. Yeah.
Everything that you
One
as
story.
A childhood
yeah, yeah.
happened to him in a weekend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
basically, it's the Star Wars equivalent of The Hangover.
Yeah. Exactly.
You had The Hangover,
and you're just sort of like, oh yeah, everything that you. Had in your mind is being like, this guy is the best.
He's the coolest character. One of the coolest characters of all time, bar none. He's,
yeah,
one,
no,
he's up
and
there.
Then this leads me to believe this that he then does nothing for the next 20 years
yeah,
of his life.
This is my theory on how this movie... This is how I fix this movie. Han Solo's dead. We have this movie called Solo. Everyone gets together at his funeral. Someone goes up and tells this fucking incredibly cool story about Han Solo. And then someone butts in and goes, that's not true at all. This is how this went. Completely different story. Yeah. Third person gets up and goes, you guys are wrong. Another cool story. And then it's kind of this anthology of the mythos.
And then
the,
it turns
the
out
mythos
Han Solo's not dead!
Or no, even if he's real dead. But just like the end is like Chewie just actually going, actually. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then it just fucking
freeze frame.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, no, but just like just have keep the mystery of this character. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that was, I mean, the other, it's Solo was the natural progression. Of
Solo was greedy.
Yeah, but
that's what it was.
But
it
no,
was
but it
greedy.
Was the natural progression of Yoda flipping around like a bouncing ball with a lightsaber.
Yeah.
It was in my head. I was like, boy, Yoda must have been such a badass. But you know what? He wasn't like bouncing around and flipping with a lightsaber. I was like,
I would have totally
like,
bought
no.
if he just like overpowers a guy with the Force because he's fucking Yoda. And like, oh, this is an all-time fucking
my scene. And they've done something like that. I think in like the video games or whatever,
yeah,
where
yeah.
like Vader like wrecks a Star Destroyer or some
and
shit.
And Yoda like catches it. He's like, no.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like that would be like I would just love like to see like the clone army just going and Yoda just goes like, whoosh, and they all like freeze like Magneto style.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, oh, he's Force holding them back. Like not a Force choke. He's holding an entire army. You'd be like, what? Like. I don't need to see him flipping around with a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I wanted. I don't know.
Very bizarre choices.
You're a little younger, though. I sense you're a little bit of a prequel
funny
boy.
That's funny you say that. No, I'm not. I hate... This is
what an accusation. What an accusation.
I try not to say this around polite company. I'm not a Star Wars boy.
Okay. Oh, fair.
That's
okay. You're a Trek guy?
No, I just honestly, I grew up watching Everybody Loves Raymond with my mom. I was straight as a kid, you know, went from like Sesame Street, Power Rangers, straight to basically sitcoms and movies.
That's interesting. What's your
I mean, Star Wars is movies, I guess.
Sure. But like when you talk about sitcoms, like you're a sitcom guy. You have that. That's your language.
Yeah, absolutely.
For you, what differentiates like a great sitcom from like an all right, this is okay?
Well, that's an interesting question because I find sometimes I watch a sitcom and I think this is just a brilliantly written play farce.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Everything you can tell, I guess maybe the first 10 minutes there's one or two different locations, but like I said, an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond, even some good Modern Family, some whatever, they can all happen on one sort of plane. People coming in and out. Frasier was the best at this. Frasier was like a play. They go that episode where they go to a ski lodge and everyone thinks the other person is attracted to somebody else. They have a crush, but they oh my god, it's a perfect little French play farce in like 22 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Just such good writing. And
but I think they're also like it's sitcoms succeed because they play by their rules. Right, where you're
sure.
like, I'm not saying that every sitcom is the same, has the same rules, but like you couldn't necessarily do, I think, that little ski lodge mix up with every sitcom, but like Frasier, yeah, that made sense. Like, there's, I think, an element of like a comfort level of you're like, I have this ensemble and that ensemble like defines like the
right.
rules, and then the writers can be like, what can these characters do? You know, like...
Well, I guess the more modern, like something like Community,
yeah.
which
oh,
is
I
truly
love,
every
I
episode's
love
a different genre
yeah,
of
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
The
but
first
yeah,
four
you're
seasons
right,
of
core,
Community.
That core cast.
The first four
yeah,
seasons of Community are, for me, an all-time great show.
So, like, once you get those characters nailed, though, you can, like, you throw them into a situation, and then, not to say the dialogue writes itself, but you're like... You know
sure.
what I mean? Like, you,
no,
like,
no,
you have
understand.
Such a, like, well, in
the
this,
archetypes
Troy
are
acts
so
this
strong.
Way, Abed walks this way.
Absolutely.
Like, Riddle will say this, Shirley will say this, and you're like...
And
that's... I'm not diminishing those writers at anything, but I feel that you get to like play so much quicker
because
you don't need to like
establish. But that's because you have a solid kind of show bible of how everyone acts. And
yeah, exactly.
The thing about the sitcoms that kind of differentiate something like Community, which I enjoyed immensely, and like The Big Bang Theory, which I did not enjoy, is there's a sense of growth and humanity with those kind of characters.
Yeah.
Where it's like where Big Bang Theory felt very rigid, and even though these characters like went through relationships and got older and whatever the case, it didn't feel like they changed.
Yeah,
and
no,
sure
there
are going to be
like
no.
Big Bang Theory may as well be The Simpsons.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's no like you're like mm-hmm. why are we still in college? I know that they get jobs or whatever, but from a character growth perspective, they reset basically every episode.
But I think there's a plus side to that too, and that like I think one thing that Curb Your Enthusiasm has very strongly that Big Bang Theory has or all these shows have of like sometimes I'm watching Curb Your Enthusiasm and nothing funny's happened yet, but someone introduces an idea and I as a viewer I'm like, oh, Larry's not gonna like that. How's Larry gonna deal with that one? Because I know that character. I've seen him so many.
But you get that I think with Community
like
also though.
Years?
Like you
yeah.
can get that too. Where
yeah,
you're yeah, sort of
Abed's
like,
gonna freak out.
Yeah,
yeah,
Abed's
yeah.
gonna freak out and Troy will not understand.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, where it's like you're right, that is a bit of a shortcut, but it's also I think earned because
no,
you believe
yeah.
these characters
yeah,
and the
act. I'm not saying it's a shortcut like as a
I'm offended. No, I'm kidding.
Exactly. I'm not intending to say like it's a shortcut. I'm just saying that like when you get that show bible and get those characters, you get to like jump ahead to those situations. You don't need to like establish them and stuff. You can just
no,
be
but,
like,
but you have to do that through the writing
yeah.
and through the period of time. Like you can't
there.
Do episode one in the pilot, you're not going to have that. But if you go through three seasons of this old Jewish man being a curmudgeon, and then you're like, someone took his parking spot that was right in front, and getting the best parking spot is incredibly important to him. You know this is going to be a conflict.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the foreshadowing
exactly.
works different because, you know, in Larry David's case, everything annoys him mm-hmm. and everything upsets him. So any minor inconvenience for him is going to be exacerbated into a major
like
plot point, right? Always Sunny.
Always
too,
Sunny.
Yeah.
It's just you're like something happens, and then you're like, and I know how all four, five of these characters will just lose their mind about it.
Yeah.
And that'll be 20 minutes.
And that's great. It's great TV. It's
yeah,
great TV.
Absolutely. And not only that, but also like there's. You know, it's the literal situation comedy. Like, some, I find, there's some shows where it's like, oh, this is pretty joke, like a 30 Rock, for example, is so well written in terms of joke structure, and everybody's coming and there's a joke every 20 seconds. And then something like, I'm trying to think of a dip, like even Modern Family, which does have a lot of jokes, or especially Curb, which there's literally no written jokes.
Yeah.
It's all situation.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's what a sitcom is called, a situation comedy.
But
and I like the idea there's all these different, you know, like something like Everybody Loves Raymond, which I've been really, I'm pushing that show. Perfect blend of the two. There's jokes, there's the characters, there's the situation. Oh, how's Deborah going to act when Ray does this?
I've never gotten into
some shows, I think, are a little bit more
it.
Of this, more too writerly, a little too, some rely too much on character and don't have enough jokes. I love a sitcom. God, I love sitcoms.
My favorite 30 Rock joke of all time is when they're trying to, I think they're trying to save the show or whatever, and it's like the to the writer's room, Liz Lemon is just sort of like, and just they're like, this has to be one of our like all-time greatest shows, whatever, blah 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 blah, like big, like everybody like pull out all the stops, all your best work, like this is like how we're gonna get the networks paying attention to it, and just don't write jokes about Krang. You cannot write jokes about Krang. Any time spent on a syndicated television show talking about Krang is time wasted. Like
that's
it's just
amazing.
Like, it's, and then it just cuts to commercial. And Sarah had like the best. She was like, who's Krang? And I was like, you and everyone else. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Like other than like a few dudes,
just
who, like,
a couple Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's,
I
no, you understand.
Like,
he's the brain
like,
in the middle of
like, an extended bit of being like, just don't write any jokes about Krang. Nobody knows who Krang is. It's just a waste of
that's
everybody's
so
time.
That's so funny.
I was like, I died. I was like, and just and then it like that it cuts to commercial because you know commercials used to be on television.
Oh yes. I you know what show I've really been enjoying the last couple of years is Only Murders in the Building.
Oh yes.
Have you watched this?
I'm strolling through it. I'm towards the end of the first season.
First of all, Short and Martin just together is just
it's fantastic.
It's an all-time great duo, just in terms of pacing and them together, it's just them. And Selena Gomez is like fine, she's absolutely fine. She kind of mumbles all of her line, everything.
Yes,
but like
she sure does.
I like that.
But like
I
everyone else, Martin
is playing a little against type. Like he's playing a lot more vulnerable than the typical Steve Martin character,
sure.
which is like just enough to be like I'm like oh like interested. Like he's acting like a Steve Martin character in like the first episode.
Yes.
But then like by the second episode, you're like oh no,
this is a charade.
He's falling apart, and usually. He's not like usually he's playing just for laughs. Building's really good. Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to talk about the festival situation?
I mean,
are we saying conspiracy theories?
I mean,
whoa!
I haven't seen.
I'm open to them.
I mean, I think there's something. I think something's up. As a non-comedian, looking at first of all, I think the Archivest thing is insane. I know that's not enough money to shut down the festival, but that they had to
$800,000 is not enough.
Yeah, it's not going to kill the festival, but I don't understand that. Like the that story came out.
That makes no sense. First of all, there's no court in the world that'll say, based on a verbal agreement with no writing, that someone has a job for life and cannot be fired. It goes against labor laws. It's impossible.
Yeah, but then how did the court?
I have no. There's something.
That's
off.
What I said.
I was like,
none of that makes sense. Like just to begin with, none of that makes sense. And then for the fact that they couldn't come up with that money, and then they had to raid the offices.
Yeah. There's
like,
something doesn't add up.
Exactly. That's
first
what
of
I
all,
say, like,
first of all, whenever you win a settlement in court, very few times does it have to be paid out in a lump sum in one time.
That they raid the offices.
Yeah, and then they're like, we're coming into the office. I'm like, that doesn't add
up.
Hey,
this stapler, this is $2-3. Throw it in the bag.
Yeah, throw it in the bag. We're going to sell all this for profit, and then we're going to pay this one guy. No, you're not. No, I don't think you are.
None of that makes any sense. No. And then I also...
For me, it's less about why. I don't give a shit why. For me, it is a... As a comedian, it sucks. It hurts worse as a Montrealer. It feels like a gut punch to the arts and lifestyle culture of the city.
Agreed.
I'm glad you said that. I completely agree. You know what I keep thinking about? And this is very cheesy. Little 12-year-old Daniel who saw
in the
Just
crowd.
For Laughs as a kid. And
it was
it inspired
on TV.
Him,
you were on TV.
I wasn't
yes,
I wasn't
you were.
Fishing.
Yeah.
I wasn't fishing.
No, you were on TV. You asked a question to Brad Garrett.
and I got a big. That was my first laugh that I ever got.
But, that guy, and he's hooked ever since. He's been hooked ever since.
I think that it's a hit for that. You know, I love. It's
people
like
come to
a lot of locals are like, oh no, I don't get to do my show this. It's like, all right, this is so much bigger.
Yeah,
than
yeah,
all,
yeah. The
this
12,
so
the 12 minutes you're gonna do in front of 64 people and make $4. Shut your fucking mouth.
It's obviously a different audience, but I feel, and I would probably care a little bit less. But it would be like when there was talk of us like losing F1, and then somehow like everything like rallied around and we kept it. I was like, why didn't that happen?
Yeah.
Right? Because there was like that year or whatever when they were negotiating F1 contracts.
Yeah, well, this is what happened. We were all like, yeah, fuck you. And they're like, no, we're going to bring it to Toronto. And we're like, you're going to fucking what, mate?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you're going to fucking what,
dude? The fact that JFL 42 is still happening really
I don't think
me.
It is. I don't know what it is. Is
said,
it? Just Relapse?
They said.
As of now, I think I asked a former
Just Relapse employee and they don't think it's happening. But I don't know.
I mean, but admittedly, it is.
If it does, if Just for Last 42 happens,
it's a smaller
festival, though.
So
I am radicalized.
Like, so maybe that, like,
I am
was
radicalized.
Like, thought of, like, I was like, why don't they just do something like 42, where it's like, it's going to be smaller. It's not going to be as crazy. Like, but, like, okay, we can, you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Is like, why they owe themselves money? Like Avenco, Bell, and Group CH are listed as the debtors, but they, like, own the festival. Like
there's something that we're not going to hear about it for another 25 years.
Yeah,
we're all going to be old men, and then we're going to hear
it. Like, I really, I feel it's strange that the city doesn't step in and bail something out because you're like the city makes billions of dollars off this.
Oh yeah.
How do you? First of all, just the tourism, and not to mention that the Just for Laughs has always made their money with all these grants from bringing people in, tourism bullshit, right?
Yeah.
They've never had a vested interest in booking me or Daniel Karen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're Montrealers. They never had a vested interest.
Yeah.
They make more money when they take some juggler from Australia and bring him over and say, look, it's an international thing.
Australia pays them.
And you know, exactly right. Like, so they never had a vested interest in the local talent here. Well, and even as much as to say, the new booking committee and stuff, the guys who we talked to, we were in the green room with, they literally told us to our face, without exaggeration, we're not here to cultivate young talent and up-and-coming talent.
Oh, they're here to put on a festival.
They want you to build an audience and then show up and then basically fill a room for them.
Yeah.
So this festival, in terms of like what it does for Canadian artists, it's not 1995. It's not going to be a launching pad to a fucking sitcom and wealth and fame.
No.
What it is it's a nice thing, and guys like me and Dan grew up loving it. So the fact that I got to perform at the biggest comedy festival in the world and I had my name on the fucking website will always mean something to me.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'll be wild. It's wild to me.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go.
But
go.
Just on that,
You're
do you remember
guest,
who
sir.
You were next to on the list of... Because I remember Dan Harmon, Daniel Karen.
Oh, oh shit.
Now I forget who was after me. I forget, but I had a good...
That's really cool.
You had good seats.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Exactly.
You're rubbing shoulders with the big ones. You know what? It's funny. I don't remember who was next to me.
I forget who was on the other side. But yeah, Dan Harmon, Daniel Karen. Oh, maybe it was. I guess it was somebody else. Anyway, all that to say, I completely agree with you. And I'll tell you what a friend said to me. It's like cynically, they said JFL is like the reason the festival exists is a big TV taping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they paper the fucking room anyway.
Yeah. And then they have syndication deals all over the world. All those Just for Laughs shows on CBC and whatever.
Yeah,
they make so much money with that. And that has been lessening every year because there's less comedy on television. Mm-hmm. It's more streaming.
But they've had the Netflix tapings also. You know what I mean?
But even that,
and then
less
CBC
money,
Gems, they
no...
have the streaming. But then you have to
this
have
is why
people
we
who
striked.
Are. I hear you. But these are why people go. Like people go out of their way on Netflix to go watch. No one goes, I'm in the mood for some comedy. They're like, I want to see this guy's special. This guy came out with a special, right? So when you have CBC Gems, it's people that you might not know. You have to market the shit out of it so people have that kind of interest.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like when people
the
are like.
Yeah, Rick Mercer stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rick Mercer's presenting some new comedians.
Yeah, I was
and
like,
that
eh.
was and that was the
but
show.
But I was like, but I fucking PVR'd the whole series. I'm like, because I want to find when Ness is on, and I haven't stayed stuck on my fucking PVR right now. I've never deleted it because I fucking you know.
Yeah.
So no, my buddy is on TV, right? Like,
but at the same time, that was you're just attaching Rick Mercer, but then that was an exposure for everybody.
Sure.
Like, that was the point of that. But I feel that now nobody watches network. They're just gonna tune into the guy they know.
Yeah.
Like, sure. I don't think anyone's like, well, I'd say I don't it think
might
anyone...
be, it might be a bigger problem with comedy systemically that everyone has to create their own audience. So there's no real, it's the only market left. It's your own market that you generate for yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Which is like, do it on YouTube or don't.
Yeah. I fucking
the worst. The worst.
You find, because Dan, you've done sketch and stand-up. Mm-hmm. You're multidisciplinary.
Technically, that's true.
We should say that he is plugging an upcoming sketch event.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that.
Ladies and gentlemen are back, baby.
Yeah.
You and the very celebrated Chris Sandifer.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So if for you, as someone who does more than just stand-up, you do a bunch of different things.
I try.
Multidisciplinary.
Multidisciplinary is goddamn right. So the festival closes. Do you feel like this is a situation that makes you want to push another direction? You want to do more sketch? You want to do more writing, whatever? You want to go into different directions more? Does this have an impact in your game plan in any way? Or what do you think about that?
The festival specifically? The new?
Yeah. Or just the way comedy is in general?
I'm proud to say I think I've always had a healthy relationship to Just for Laughs, which is it's never going to solve any issues.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing that comes. Hopefully you get a little bit of money, you get a credit, and then you work yourself. You yourself work to do other things for the rest of the year. Yeah, I think JFL is lovely, but it's certainly not the be-all, end-all. And unfortunately, yeah, the answer seems to be what's that thing that I just heard in basketball? If you're good to the game is good to you.
I like that.
I'm realizing, yeah, it's just about
it feels like a quote from a mob movie.
Doing good. Yeah, that's true. No, I always do. I feel like JFL's so nice, but also we can't. The people who really, I've had arguments with comedians who are like, they should give us so much more. And I'm like, well, we shouldn't care about this 10 days
I always say that, like, I'm a big Oceaga guy, big music guy, whatever.
Sure.
And I'm always a little bummed when, you know what, 3 Montreal bands a day get booked, basically, and they get put on a teeny tiny little stage. And I'm like, you know why? Because everybody here is from Toronto or elsewhere in the world and whatever. And this, sadly, isn't for the Montreal music scene. It's a big international music fest.
Exactly.
Like how like when, to be when Montreal, if I go to Coachella and they're going to be like, we're a band from California, I don't give a shit.
That's been
Show
my argument
punk.
For years, Keith. That's exactly what I've said.
But yeah.
It's like, you know, I do think maybe more local people could open it just for laughs. Have these people do theater shows, maybe get a 10-minute opener for local, throw some bones. But fundamentally, yeah. The fest is huge because it brings Kevin Hart and Jerry Seinfeld and these people, world-renowned comedians in the same space.
People who are like,
and the space kind of could be anywhere. It's sort of an afterthought.
It just happened
to be in Montreal. Yeah, it kind of, exactly.
That, I feel, that falls into part two of my conspiracy theory.
Oh, my God.
Where I think, I'm going to get political.
Oh, I love it.
Dun, 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 dun.
Make America great
again. I feel that
again.
if I'm just for laughs, and I've been running this festival for 40 years, and now I need to jump. I don't know how they've been navigating French language laws.
What do you mean?
Right.
Just doing vast majority of English shows and not booking whatever.
They have a whole French section, though.
Not nearly the same size.
No, but I mean, I don't think that matters.
I mean, I think that it's much easier. And then you fly everybody out from California and New York, whatever, all up to Montreal. I think it makes a ton of sense from a Canadian business point of view to relocate to Toronto. And if they're an international company, relocate somewhere else. Why the hell is this in Montreal where no one speaks the language and they need to deal with the government and they need to deal with whatever? I was like, there's a spin to be like, oh no, now it's in Toronto. Like, and I just feel because as Dan was saying, there's the festival element, but I think anyone who's been there knows that like there's like so many show pitches and like a lot of people do business at Just for Laughs, on account of the fact that,
but
like,
the entertainment industry has an illicit understanding that the world runs in English. Like, you want to go to New York, LA, you want to get things done, you have to speak English. Even Quebec has contingents in New York and LA that advocate for Quebecers, and they all speak English. They're all able to
navigate
that.
But if I'm trying to run the business end of Just for Laughs, which is the TV show pitches and all that stuff, I'm running Just for Laughs out of New York or LA, and I'm like, why am I still doing it in Montreal?
Pay Canadian taxes.
Well,
yeah.
So I think you underestimate the French side and how much money there is
but I feel
how people from New Brunswick come in for the French side of Just for Laughs and Ottawa and Hull.
You can do very easily next year Juste pour Rire, and it's a French-only festival, like the Francophonie or whatever else like that, and it'll do fine. It'll be scaled down, and it'll do absolutely fine, and then you move all of the... Why am I why is so much New York, LA, whatever business happening in Montreal? Like, it's just like, if I'm the people running it, I think as soon as the Montrealers sold it, the importance of it being in Montreal took a backseat for them. And I feel that they might retool this, and then there might. Like I said, I think 100% there's going
to
be a.
I think what we do is we move it to Mobile, Alabama.
Ooh.
Just we take over a fucking city.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But that's it. But like I said, from the business end, it's bonkers that everybody comes in to do. Like, you're moving all these studio execs and all that stuff. It's like, here's the thing that made me start thinking
but I
about
guess
this.
Now, hold on. Before you say that, I guess, you know, what are the biggest film festivals? You got to go to some small town in Utah. You got to go to the south of France. You got to go to Venice. I guess that's a slightly bigger place. But I think there's some – that's part of the
– charm?
Charm or maybe the point
more like summer camp?
This Hollywood ascends on this small town that they aren't usually at for a little while.
It's possible.
There is some value in that, I think. To make it you know, some festival in LA, it's like, well, I saw fucking Kevin Hart at the Comedy Store two weeks ago. It's not
that's
that,
the thing.
Whatever he's playing here.
I think they're going to move it to Toronto. I think that's what'll happen. Is you'll have Just Blast in Toronto and Just Pour Rire in Montreal. I think that's I can see that future, and it's a bummer. Well, at least for us, the English comedy fans. I think it's going to be weird. Someone was talking about the fact that they're like they don't tear down the Café Spectacle, right? Like, so there's going to be a weak hole. For it, right? Like, it's still around after Just for Laughs, and then I think, is it Francophilie after or before or whatever? But, like, there's a gap.
So it's going to be, like a weird ghost
town
for 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's going to be, like, Jazz Fest, nothing.
Yeah.
And then, like, Francophilie or Mutek or whatever, the one that comes after. But it's just, like, you're just going to have, like, this barren wasteland.
That's true, being, right? Like, yeah, well.
Where all the roads are closed, because they're not going to, like I said, they're not taking those stages down, because they got to be up the week later. Like.
They put up stages fast, though. No, I mean, sometimes I'm watching and I'm like, oh, cool, the stage is up. And I go, oh, no, that's not the, you know, it's like July 23rd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool, Just for Laughs stage. And I go, oh, no, that's some other two-day festival that's thing. And they're going to take that down and put a new one in a day and a half. It's unbelievable.
Some strange venues, too.
Yes.
Inside a church, a non-air-conditioned church.
I know.
Outdoors. It's unbelievable.
And not, like, I was telling, and not the Comedy Nest, the one English comedy club in Montreal. Mm-hmm. It's a little far away from the other venues, but to think you have a comedy festival and then you don't have the one comedy club. I don't know. I found it last year. The Nest was not part of the
at all? Not even the tapings?
Zero. Oh.
I thought they did the...
Maybe the Discovery.
Yeah.
But that was even... I don't know if that was during the... what do you call it? You know, because they always have the little... local weekend, and then on the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the big celeb thing.
Yeah.
Nobody came on the celeb.
Where was you did JFL Originals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where was that recorded?
Theater St. Catherine.
That was Theater St. Catherine. Okay, so it was 2 years ago that it was at Nest, I think.
Right, yeah.
Yes. So 2022 is at Theater St. Catherine. Never been so nervous in my life.
Aww.
Really?
Yep.
Wedding day? No?
I was less nervous on my wedding
day. Birth of your child.
Birth of my child was pretty stressful, but there's like 40 doctors in the room, so I'm like, someone will figure this out.
You're like, I'm the least important part of this.
No, literally.
Neither might be played on the radio.
Yeah, it's true.
This one will
be. This one's going to be. People are going to might hear this. No, I think the birth of my kid wasn't stressful because the doctor like went out of their way to tell me that I'm useless and I can't do anything. So it's like kind of like, what is in my control right now? Just my attitude and like taking care of my wife. So I was like, just be positive. Like, nothing else I can do. I can't. Hey, there's a high risk pregnancy. We're going in for an emergency C-section. I'm not like, great. Where do I cut? Like, I'm just like, you know, like, cool. Take
Get
the wheel.
Get me my scrubs.
Yeah. I was in scrubs already.
I was just like, what do we? That's true. You can't be there if you're not in scrubs.
What are we doing?
I woke up, put them on. I just put on the scrubs.
You know what I mean? And they're like, you know, but like,
ready.
For that, it was more like, I guess in terms of like nerves, it was more like, I felt it was like an important moment for me. Like, not to say that the wedding and the kid were. But the wedding and the kid felt like it was just a celebration of things I had already.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Whereas the,
it's
whereas
a
the
whole
taping
other
was
scale,
like,
I think. Like, it's like, there's an intimacy of those moments, and then this is a.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wait, this is a thing that I.
Yeah, this is the one I could be embarrassed about. Like, this is, you know what I mean? This is the one that could end really poorly.
Yeah.
The other two, I knew they were going to be fine, so it was okay.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the wedding was lovely.
What do you? I don't know. I hope the city somehow rallies around local comedy. Like just because I've always
they
I've,
won't.
I know they won't. I know they won't. Montreal's a terrible city. Like,
no, it's not a terrible city. Our friend Chris Vendito put it perfectly. Montreal is an event city. Yeah. They go out to do something. They're very few. I don't think they're going out just for the sake of it.
That, like, we're the most jaded people. Like we talked when we had Pat Gway on from Evenco. He was like, yeah, there's a reason that, like, 75% of our tickets tell to Toronto. Because Montreal is just like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, Montrealers do not sell out Oceaga.
Yeah.
Torontonians sell out Oceaga. Montrealers do not sell out F1.
Yeah.
It's tourists who come and Montreal's like, it happens every year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I get it. We're an event city in the big grand scheme, but Montrealers are over everything.
Yeah. Because we're always like, oh, these fucking tourists are here again.
I know,
that's interesting.
I'm guilty as charged. I go up to the cabin a lot in the summer because I'm like, I hate these tourists.
Yeah, we're
like,
to avoid the F1. Avoid the, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
See, you're talking about jaded. Here's my shitty jaded opinion, which is like, God, I hope there's a spotlight on the local scene. To me, it's like, God, so many of these locals are terrible and do not need a spotlight. I find there's a lot.
Like,
you know what Montreal doesn't have enough?
Name here.
Doesn't have enough big fish to keep all the small fish in a even tinier little pond. Like, I find, does that metaphor track?
Yeah, I get it.
One thing I think Montreal, like I said, I told somebody this recently.
Montreal comedians
one thing
are
just for
kelp.
Laughs is useful for is that local comedians see better comedians once
for
10 days.
That's also,
and
that's
you go, oh,
point.
I'm like not as good as I thought I was. These people are fucking really good at this job.
But that's what I'm saying.
They get too much praise. They get too. There aren't Montreal. One thing about the local Montreal comedy scene, people aren't mean enough. If people don't like each other, they kind of
that's
are
so
quietly
interesting coming
shitty,
from you of all people.
I'm getting so sick of these. Terrible
one of the
comedians.
One of the kindest
you know
people
why?
I've ever met.
Because I love the art form of comedy.
I hear you.
And there's some people who are ruining it for everyone. Yeah. I think.
I was.
Ugly. Making it gross.
I was in the green room last night. What day is it? Monday. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 2 days ago. You were there too. So at the late show, two open micers came.
Yeah.
And sat in the green room. And I guess they didn't have kind of an understanding of what they were watching or why they were there. They were just there to hang out, I guess. And they just ran their fucking mouths, and they were loud, and they took up a lot of space, and they were fucking annoying, and they were laughing boisterously, and they weren't paying attention. And the headliner got up and started watching the show from the crowd. So, and I looked at them, and I was like, don't you guys realize, like, what you're, you know what I mean? But there's no sense of that.
No.
There's no sense of that. And I think when you're talking about watching better comics to become better, that's a huge missing link. And I think what happens is if you go to a show that's like a showcase style show and it's a bunch of Montrealers, sure, that's great. You get to hang out with your peers and, you know, I love seeing Daniel and I love seeing all these guys I work with. That's great. But there's something valuable about watching someone who's better at the craft than you are.
100%.
But that's what Dan was saying. And that's what I was saying. When I say, like, people are, like, going to crowd around a local scene, you also need to have, like, kingmakers of just being like, this is the guy. Like here's a real local headliner. I know we have like a couple of them, but a lot of them have moved away or just done comedy in French.
Sure.
You know, like, but I'm just saying, but like those, like, that's the thing is, like, you think that, like, oh, you know, I'm like if you think like the LA scene with like a Zach Galifianakis or whatever else, you're like, yeah, people were going out to see Zach even at a local level and then saw other people underneath him. I don't know if
absolutely.
I don't know if we have Zachs around, other, you know, Zach Kick notwithstanding. But
yeah.
But it's just like, it's like, I don't know, and I know all you guys, and like, that's what I'm saying. Someone, you know, like, I think you're both very talented, but like, the scene should elevate to the point where you're like, yeah, people are going out to see Lawrence Corber and Dan Karen because it's Lawrence Corber and Dan Karen. Like, separate the wheat from the chaff kind of thing. And I find, like, right now the Montreal scene is, unless you are into the scene, I don't know that, like, Dan Karen and Lawrence Corber, Chris Vendito, that those guys are better than comedy at the shit show town.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Like,
sure.
I don't have, like our
world
scene...
famous comedy at the shit show town.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't see, like, that success for you guys.
Sure, 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 sure.
And as a casual viewer, I wouldn't know that you're like, oh, that's a good show with a couple of, like, the top guys in the scene versus this is a show run by college kids figuring it out.
And I think that is also indicative of a larger problem, whereas people, if you see a bad movie, you're going to go see another movie or you're going to go watch another TV show. Or if you see a bad comedy
show, like,
you're like, I don't know if this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You work all day, you get a babysitter, you fill up your car, You go park, you pay overpriced food, and then you sit down, and then someone goes on stage, ah, cum joke incest, babies, and you're like, oh, no.
And not only that, cum joke incest, babies, I'm like, what's wrong with you people for not laughing at me?
This worked
at some other, at the chuckle fuck comedy, whatever. You idiots, you're not laughing at me? Pff, this place sucks. And you're like, this sucks.
I paid for this? You know?
Yeah.
It sucks. It's tough. It's a tough fucking racket. And it's a weird art
form. But that's the thing, but you have that scenario where you have, I guess, like, the only place where if someone tells me, like, where do you go see comedy? I'm like, and it sucks. I just have to say The Nest. Because I was like, that's the only place where there's any kind of, like, real quality filter happening.
Mm.
You know, if they're like, if you have one night to go see the comedy, I'm like, if I don't know, if you are a visitor coming out of town, like, your only real safe bet's The Nest, buddy. Like, you know what I'm like? And I'm not even saying it's a guaranteed home run, but
no,
I'm like...
No, but that's
like,
impossible in comedy in general.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. But that's it. But I can't refer them to, like, even
unless
half...
Unless I'm on stage.
Even half the shows...
There he is.
You know what I mean? Like, even half the shows where I have, like, certain friends producing, whatever, I'm like, I don't know about all these lineups. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, sure. You know, like, it's just like, I was like, we have one spot where I can be like, it'll probably be at least, like, professional.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even say that about a lot of nights that it'll even be, like, professional caliber stuff that you're seeing. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's... I like that there's a scene... A comedy scene should have all these different types of shows.
Yeah,
I like
that
there's... I wish there was a little more crossover, personally. I was always a fan of that. There seems to be the kind of cool queer scene is on the rise, is very hot. And then also there seems to be the sort of... hey, we can say whatever the fuck we want scene that seems to be doing very well, weirdly, that I'm a little less, that I'm a little more skeptical of, we'll say. I want more.
No, Daniel, you're not
of
understanding.
These different
they can
things.
Say whatever they want.
And they say such crazy stuff, man. You won't believe the
you
things
that
believe they say.
You won't believe what things they say. And look, that's real comedy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want more, you know, I don't know. Are people having fun on stage? That's my question. Are people having fun? Are these nights fun? It's like, well, there's two people in the audience. We're all mean. Let's get the show started. This sounds terrible. It's like, what a horrible night of comedy. This
is so funny.
You know one thing that, pretentiously, I always like to say, and I'm not that great. You know, I'm speaking so... Maybe
no, but you're
more
allowed
highly.
To wax poetic, even if like you, A, you're being very humble, but you're, B, you're allowed.
I am
you're allowed to wax.
Poetic,
you're allowed to. You're allowed to. You're allowed to have a theory
you're a
on the
you're
craft.
You're a decade in now, at least.
Yeah, a little bit more, technically.
I
and
said at least.
I need. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
There needs to be a veneer of showbiz. You know, like when I had a weekly show at a coffee shop, where the lights wouldn't. Go down enough, and there's
so
many
people
who
machine was loud.
The coffee machine would
the
go on.
The carrot cake was the main character.
A lot of people weren't there for the show, but for me and my co-host Chris Andiford, I think we always had a like. Well, we're acting as if
everything's the best.
This is showbiz.
But there was
and
a.
There's a weekly. We said the same things. Excuse me. Hold on. I'm getting emotional. and I think there's too much of like. I don't know. I just love showbiz. I love shows.
But
I love comedy. And too many people are in it for themselves. They're in it for the political reasons, which, hey, look, I'm a political guy. I have my political opinions. But also, aren't we just here to have fun and be comedy?
Well,
and
there's also there's famous, I don't know, this is I cannot attribute this quote, but like there's like a famous showbiz thing, which is like, if you don't give a shit, the crowd won't give a shit.
Sure, but I think giving a shit is not just like, I'm going to say whatever I want because I'm a fucking
badass,
but
it's
also like,
but
if you don't put the effort into it.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like holding yourself accountable to
ladies and gentlemen at Sheikha was that there was always a sincere feeling that you and Chris were having a fucking blast and you wanted everyone to have a blast.
And you're
interested
in putting on a show.
And I got to say, one of the very first shows I've ever done was Ladies and Gentlemen.
Yeah.
I know I've told the story before. But literally, I went to a fucking open mic at McLean's, like my third week into doing comedy in winter of 2014, and Chris Sandiford and Daniel Caron were outside and incredibly nice to me, just for the reason that I was there and I was new, and invited me to the show, and I always came back to that show, even though I don't think I did particularly well at Sheikha. And it was just like this energy that they would come in, and every time you'd go, let me know, I'm going to tell you how I know this guy, and they'd always give you the most wild introductions.
Yeah.
About how, you know, this made up thing, and it was just fun. It was like friendly and it was kind, and it really embodied the energy that you guys both had. And I think that's really cool. And I think that was something that made me feel welcomed as a new member of the community.
But, but I think that whatever your brand is, you still need to like take it seriously. Like even if you're the guys who are like
even if your brand is silly.
Yeah, even if your brand is silly, or even if your brand is like I'm the shitty guy who says everything, but you're like yo, like your people just paid, presumably know what they're getting into, to hear you run your mouth off about shitty things,
Pringles
saying anything.
And
you can still be professional. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Putting on that show.
But
like,
there's a distinction about even if your character on stage or your person on stage is a shitty person or an aggravating person.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing that stops you from being professional off stage, from being professional with the room, the staff, being professional with the space around other people. There's something that stops that. And there's something also I've seen. I think this is Old Man Yells at Clouds, really. Because I'm coming up
too.
On 10
hey,
years.
Look, me too.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's definitely like, you know, it's like very much like I've always had the theory that people who grew up in theater or team sports or something, a collaborative endeavor, have always succeeded a lot.
Right.
Because they understand how to be around other people. Or it's like someone who's like a tennis player has never, because you know it's all like a fucking single sport.
Yeah.
These people don't mesh well because they're it's me.
So right? That's why you think that sketch comedians are nicer people than stand-up comedians.
I don't know that many sketch people. I know some improv people.
Yeah. They work as a team.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I want to know.
Don't get me started on improv.
They're all good. I was like, I want to know how Sam Kinison was backstage.
I don't know. Probably. Okay, I would imagine loud.
Probably loud, but I feel probably professional, even though his brand was screaming at the audience.
He undoes the women from their leashes, you know, and he's like very kind. Yeah.
Yeah. And like probably on way too much coke and whatever.
Yeah,
but I can't
imagine
wants
like
to put on the best show possible.
Of a man in a trench coat screaming at an audience.
Yeah. And he did, you know.
But that's what I'm saying. But he did it like Kinison dumps to mind because it's like he did that night in, night out, and was just like an awful person on stage. Like that was his brand. But the fact that he was like touring, getting paid, getting like he could not. I've never heard any stories of like weird nightmare Sam Kinison
backstage stories. There's a wonderful documentary about him actually.
Yeah.
And they talk about him up until his death. You know what I mean? And him like turning his life around.
Yeah.
And then like tragically dying in a car accident.
Yeah. But that's it. But like. Hmm.
And it's interesting, but I think like if
he was still interested in putting on the best version of that
show. Sure.
Like,
I think if you exercise those demons off stage or on stage, like there's no reason for you to fucking, you know, while out backstage. Like even then, you know, it's all over the place.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. But he was still putting on. He was putting on
the best version.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? You'd be at a certain point, you'd be disappointed if he wasn't screaming at you.
Sure.
You know, like you'd be like, I paid for
this. Yeah. If he came out and he's like, guys, I've been soul searching, and I just
It's like if
and you're like,
you
scream
saw
at
Don
me.
Rickles and he didn't insult your race.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I saw
what the hell?
I got to see Don Rickles live like a couple years before he died, and it was fucking tremendous. He was just hammering on this black guy. He found a black guy. He found a black guy. He goes, you. He goes, yeah, what's your name? And then the guy says his name. He goes, oh, they let you out of the jungle? Fucking bam,
yeah.
Bam, bam, all night. And then he gave him a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
And then at the end, and it was like this moment where he's like, hey, I know we had a lot of fun, but you know, we're in this together. And just, have a bottle of champagne. Anyway, now you don't have to steal this. Bad again. Again. It was just he's doing something that's empirically just like awful, but man. It's so good. It's
like
so fucking entertaining.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's something that you can't replicate. Only him.
No,
only
absolutely.
Him in that era and that time and that way. It's, you know?
Just mastering tone and context and when to say
to
be sincere and then go back to the thing.
Yeah.
I love Don Rickles, man.
I can also only imagine,
funny.
Too, like, at that level, like, he even, like, probably was so good at reading people to be like, this guy could probably take it.
Yeah, but
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, as soon as he goes in, I'm sure that if he sees, like, a certain reaction, he's like, and we're done. On to the next guy.
Yeah.
When I do crowd work now way more than I used to, and I think one of the skills that I've improved on has not been like coming up with something on the spot or like the speed or the fluidity of that. I think it's distinguishing this person as a good person to speak to. That person I should avoid at all costs.
Yeah, that's it. Body language.
This person wants to talk. This person is going to make it about them. This person looks like they're having fun. This person's going to kill the mood. This person is like a teacher who's going to try and explain something for 45 minutes.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to distinguish that really quick. And I feel like that's something that's a fucking skill within that.
Yeah.
Whole subtext of skills.
Totally.
Which I'm sure, like I said, without knowing, guaranteed Rickle had mastered. Cause like,
for sure.
Like, exactly. He's like, who's going to have the most, who can I have the most fun with? Who's going to have the most
absolutely.
Fun back?
My favorite.
It's not going to be a scene.
My
He's
favorite.
He's not going to say too much. He's not going to jump in my jokes.
Don Rickles story is Don Rickles is out for dinner, sees Sinatra.
Of course, the greatest. Oh, yeah. Oh, my he God. Sees Sorry Sinatra. To yeah, the best.
And he walks over, he goes, and the Rickles date goes to the bathroom. He walks over, he goes, Sinatra, Frankie, I'm here with a date. Walk over, just come on, make me look good, baby.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, of course. I'll come right over. Sinatra, as soon as this woman comes back to the table, gets up, walks over. Hi, I just wanted to introduce myself. Don Rickles turns around and goes, Frank, not now, we're eating. Come on.
Big times Frank Sinatra.
That's the fucking greatest thing.
So good.
Yeah, oh my God.
I do want to get to five questions, but I also did want to talk briefly. Yeah,
sure, please.
Briefly about... we'll do, ladies and gentlemen, after five questions, because that's coming up. But what I want to talk about, do you have a fireplace in your house? And how do you give advice?
Oh my God! Advice by the fireplace. Yeah, no, it's not in my house. It's at
CJ Lowe has a fireplace.
Exactly. Concordia University.
I thought you
CJ
maybe brought
Lowe.
It around. It was like a portable fireplace.
For a while, I hired a piano man to play soft piano, but it was not cost effective. And we put him near the fireplace. He got sweaty. Yeah.
No,
it's so fun. God, advice by the fireplace. I love it. We just had our 100th episode.
Hey, congratulations.
And you know what's funny? I'm used to saying we, but it's just me. I can't
you,
explain Bella. How much it's just me.
Was there did someone press record?
Including listeners. Left? Just me.
Oh.
No, I have like 5 fans that write in. They're very nice. Crystal from Milwaukee. I don't know how she found the show, but I love her. Oh, my God. Some very cool people. I really like the show. It's weird. I'm not used to being proud. I can't
what
even
is
say
this
it.
Feeling? Is
but
it
I
pride?
Am very proud of the show. I think it's, like, very funny. Mm-hmm. And also, I like the tone. I'll tell you what my inspiration was. Was that what you asked?
I just said, tell us about it. I said, like, listen, if you've enjoyed Dan Karen speaking, you can do that. On
you can get more
basis.
Of it.
And specifically in like more of a dulcet tone.
I was going to say, that's exactly it.
And a little bit more Delilah-y.
There's a few podcasts that I list that I love. Including, let's for example, How Did This Get Made? You know How Did This Get
yep.
Made?
Oh, yeah.
And I love it. And I would listen to it in the morning, and I would think, you're all fucking yelling and
they are
amped up, and I can't handle this. Mm-hmm. I love these three people, these three comedians. Mm-hmm. I'd say, shut up to myself. Why are you yelling? Yeah, and then there's a few shows that... with Gourley and Rust, that's a big inspiration, with Matt Gourley, Paul Rust, mm-hmm. where they call themselves an easy-listening horror show where they talk about horror movies, yeah. but I don't. It's they call
soft.
It cozy. It's a cozy cast, and I just really wanted to make a quiet, calm show, and so there's, yeah, like you said, a fireplace roaring throughout the entire thing, mm-hmm. a bed of piano music. I'm playing a weird, quieter, softer character, kind of. And I'm not even fully aware of what I'm doing, but I can't, like, I'll be talking to somebody, and then, oh, the show starts. And then I go, hey, welcome. And I go, oh, how did I transform into, I'm not, like, as aware of it as I think people think, but I really, it's a nice, calm, relaxed show. I love it.
And people
every
ask you
Wednesday.
Ask you advice, and you provide advice. When there's,
yes.
when there's questions.
I want
advice.
More people to write in advice. I've had maybe, in the 100 episodes, maybe 10 letters Solid. That were actual listeners writing in, and then the rest I find on the internet, Savage Lovecast, or nice. Ask Annie, Ask Abby, what's the thing?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby,
thank you.
Dear yeah. Abby.
I forgot, I ignore the name of Abby, and I changed it to Dan Lila. but yeah, I'd love, you both got to be on. I've been trying to have Lawrence on, of course, it's 5 to 6.
Yeah,
it's a bigger
such
guess.
A bad
so
time.
It's very hard for people who have
I,
jobs
and, you know,
to
it's,
come.
I've
it's
enjoyed
like
I've enjoyed the episodes I've done, but I would love to come back.
Oh my God! Well, in studio, I mean, of course.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah, because
yeah,
we've only done remote.
Yeah,
we've only
course.
Done remote. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I
yeah.
want people in studio because COVID, of course, yeah,
shut down
I couldn't
studios.
Do it. I did a couple of Zoom episodes, which were, in my opinion, not fun. I didn't like them. And then I did some where I was the only one allowed in the studio, and I could call.
Okay.
And those were a little bit fun, but some people would call from a submarine, and it was terrible connections, and it was like, yeah, the way we do it now, 2 guests an episode in the studio.
That's awesome.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Which day? And I know Wednesdays. I only ever listen to the CJ Lowe podcasting area. I've never listened to it live in my life. Sorry.
I know. I forget that I'm on the live radio sometimes. It is wild. To me, I go in to record the podcast to upload it later.
Yeah.
In my head. And then so sometimes I go, I heard you in my car. And I go, oh, yeah. Oops. But, yeah, every Wednesday, 5 p.m., CJ Lowe, 1690 a.m.
Hey.
1690 a.m. Big a.m. dial.
Yeah.
So I did want to hit that before we hit.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's five questions. They've changed since the last time you were a guest. I will send them to Lawrence. Or well, do you know them by heart?
I don't. Lawrence. I don't know anything
you know
by heart.
First question by heart.
What is? I don't know that one either.
Hottest.
Oh, what's your hottest take?
There it is.
Just my hottest take in general.
Period. Of the moment, I guess. Like hot take of the moment.
Wow, let me think. Hot take. I'd like to. Okay, here's a thing I'm not proud of.
Okay.
I want everyone.
This is a hot take.
I'm a big. I love everyone. There's no accounting for taste,
really
of course.
You were gonna say
people
are Raymond. I love everybody. Loves Raymond.
No, I was gonna say I have less and less patience every day with picky eaters.
Oh.
I feel like it's a real off-putting thing. I understand people have dietary restrictions, vegetarian, vegan, no problem. That, to me, that's like
you're not a picky
something
eater,
else completely.
Yeah.
That's something else entirely. People are like, ew. People who look at food and say, ew, bug the fuck out of me.
Are you like a big foodie at all? Or medium? So
I'm not proud of it, but maybe, yes. Okay. I love to cook. I haven't ordered out in like 2 years. Okay. I only cook. I love to cook. I love to eat.
We were just in Texas a couple weeks ago, and there's a place there called Not a Damn Chance Burger, which is the burger joint of Philip Franklin Lee, who's like has two Michelin stars as a chef.
Okay.
And there's one item on the menu, and it is the perfect cheeseburger. That is it.
Well, you mean there's literally only one menu?
Yeah,
oh, that's
so
funny.
And fries.
Right.
like that is. And then there's a number of beers on tap and stuff. Like there's selection in terms of beers and cocktails, but it's like this cheeseburger. It's like a Wagyu beef cheeseburger with these toppings and whatever. And they're like build your own burger, not a damn chance. That's like the joke. And it's like you get this burger. And like prepared perfectly every time.
And a girl was just sort of like,
I've been here before, and this is like underdone. And it's one of those places where like you can see the entire it's like a counter looking into the set of the Bear. It's
right.
Basically like what sure. You see it all happening, and you see like everyone in the back just like looked at this girl like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
We do this, and like and the guy like I liked the fact that the guy behind the counter like didn't buy it. He was like, it's fine.
Like, didn't even look at it.
Yeah. He's it's like, fine. And she's like, blah blah blah. He's like, we're not. She was like, can you throw it on the grill again? He's like, we're not doing that, and it's fine. Mm. Just
yeah.
Like just not even taking the bait. Like I don't know if she was trying to troll, but I was like, shut up. Like I was like, shut up, and I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I get a little eye-rolly when it comes to fine dining. Sometimes I'm not a fan of the exclusivity of it. I do think food. To get really annoying about it is about making it for other people and sharing it and being here together
This place I honestly really enjoyed because it is a burger joint and it's not like it's an expensive burger. It was a
Wagyu beef. I mean,
$16 American for a burger, but I'm like that's not much crazier than a $20 burger at like Notre Dame de Boeuf or whatever. Yeah, there's fries and stuff, but I'm like. That's not insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like,
totally.
Like, this is a prepared as a burger to perfection. I was like, I was expecting it to be maybe more like a $25 American burger and be like, oh, this is a good burger, but so much money. But I was like, oh no, it's $16. I was like, that's fine. You did it. It's fine.
Yeah, I would say I'm rethinking pickiness. And even, you know, there's food I don't like. And when I eat, like, olives, I'm not – I want to like olives. I don't like olives. I eat one, and I go, oh, yeah, I don't like it. And that's fine. People go, oh, God. Like, all right. I'm so sick of it. Just eat the food. Eat the food that God gave you.
or eat around it and don't make a production.
You'll eat again later today.
Yeah.
Several times
not
tomorrow.
Not a
big deal.
Small portion.
Yeah.
Move on. Dan.
Please.
To you.
Uh-huh.
Who is the star of Sesame Street? Like, wow. Who are you tuning in for?
Well, that's a different... Oh, so you're saying who's my favorite character?
Well, no, but, like, the star. Like you're just sort of like this segment's going to kill.
Because I was going to say, I assume... This is my initial answer. I assume Big Bird is first on the call sheet.
Okay, yeah.
But to me, I'm an Oscar the Grouch man.
Oscar the Grouch.
Fully. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved Elmo. Okay. And I have a little niece, and it's amazing how much she gravitates to Elmo. Elmo just is such a killer for these kids.
Speaking of call sheets,
please.
And I get it. I get it. Like Big Bird's one, Elmo's maybe number two, probably, I think. But now, where is it just like an open invite to Kermit?
Like Kermit's at his job. He's a grown ass man.
No, but he can just show up anytime he wants. Like kind sure. of like yeah. kind of like Chris, like a Chris Rock SNL situation.
Where sure,
you're
sure.
Like,
I think
you're like, oh, Rock's here. Get him on.
I think if he's on the lot, they definitely throw him on for sure. But also, like, I think
Elmo. He's not around.
Elmo gets all the like the letter of the day. Elmo's introducing it. The number of the day. He's there in the opening song. You know, he's doing a lot of heavy lifting for the show.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it could be Elmo. Elmo's probably. Again, when I was watching Sesame Street,
yeah,
it was a lot of Big Bird. A lot of he had a lot of the emotional weight.
Yeah. Because Big Bird's learning about the world
exactly.
in real time. With
and
you.
Elmo's just having fun. Elmo's just we're learning
just
about
life.
He's partying. Learning some lessons. I feel he's a little younger though.
Yeah.
I feel that like Elmo is like five and under, and Big Bird's more like eight and under.
And I was told that I liked Grover as
a
kid,
like
but
I
don't.
Grover.
Not to say I know, of course, I remember Grover. But
I remember his work.
Yeah. I apparently, I was very into Grover, and I...
He had one of the best voices, though.
Yeah.
I didn't like Grover, but I love Super Grover.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Grover, what a tool.
Get Super over here. Come on, buddy.
Question three, Lawrence.
Question three. What piece of media has been formative in your life?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's all I have is various media that I've... grew up watching, yeah, oh my God, formative. You know what I would say in retrospect is maybe one of the most formative things, and it's maybe not the coolest thing to say these days, the Ricky Gervais Show podcast.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
the radio
yeah.
show with on XFM, everything sure. with Carl Pilkington. I remember being, I guess how old was I, 18, 17 maybe, listening, and it kind of blowing my mind of just how funny Carl was. The three of them, I felt, you know, just their approach to, and again, this is maybe high-minded, philosophy, their approach to life and the world was, I thought, both very smart, and actually, I agree with them, and yes. also, they obviously, Carl Pilkington is just watching bugs all day and is an
yeah.
idiot, and I,
yeah.
the balance of what I thought, truly, kind of, profundity and such stupidity.
Yeah.
I really, that was like very
I get that.
Formative.
I think way more into it. Like, and as you say, like not these days, but I also just think that just in generally, regardless of whatever you want to say about like Ricky Gervais,
yeah.
whatever he's done, it's like those, like, you listen back to some of that stuff and you're like, oh, it's a little edgelordy nonsense. I'm so smart. And like, it's still funny, I think. I think a lot of that stuff
yeah.
is funny because of the...
Yeah.
The relationship between the three of them. But, like...
Exactly.
You're just kind of like... It doesn't land the same way, and I think it's just because I'm older.
Oh, for sure. And back in the day, it's like, I didn't love the kind of, like, gay panic jokes that they would do, sort of. And, like, there's certain things that I didn't love. But when they hit, ooh, baby, they hit hard. And I remember listening and, like,
Stephen,
getting emotional.
Stephen
talking about life. I'm sorry?
The other one is Stephen Merchant?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I love. I
yeah,
love
yeah.
Stephen Merchant. So
I was so happy that he was the... voice of Portal 2.
Right. Yes.
No, but I say because I was already familiar with him, and I was mm-hmm. like when his voice started talking in Portal 2, I was like, whoa! Like.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I don't play video games that much, and I did play Portal 2, and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
my friend, Stephen Merchant.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Stephen Merchant.
But also, I got a shout out, Comedy Bang Bang, my favorite show.
I think
you know, it's been on for, I think, 15 years or something.
Forever.
I've listened every Monday to every episode
That's
for
nice.
15 years. I think the first episode I listened to, there was three of them. I listened because I liked Kevin Nealon. I was like, what's a podcast? Typed in SNL people I liked. Kevin Nealon was on some show, Comedy Death Ray at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I'll listen to this. And yeah, I mean, I'm such a Scott Aukerman fan. It's, I think he's so
whenever
funny.
I am like at a loss, like, and I'm just not as devout as you are, but whenever I'm like, oh, I don't know what to listen to, I'm like, inevitably I'm like, oh yeah, Comedy Bang Bang, just listen to the.
Oh really? Like, oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a devotee, but it's like, but I have probably been listening to it for like. It's definitely one of the podcasts that made me want to be like, I could do that. I could talk. It'd be fun. And I was like, this sounds like a lot of work. And they seem very clever. I could just bullshit.
I know. Truly, like you said, I can do this. And also, like, oh, you can be like a incredibly funny straight man. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I think Scott Aukerman is.
Yeah.
Because he's a fucking maniac. But he's also technically the straight man. And
I guess, yeah. Oh, yeah, because he's always hosting the
Yeah, sometimes it'll be like him, somebody playing a tiny elf, and somebody playing Santa Claus. Yeah, you're exactly. Like, well, I guess he has to kind of ground it in some ways.
Amateur taxidermists or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just like, yeah, he's the straight man in this scenario, but...
Yeah, real here, I'd love to shake his hand one day.
We'll make that happen. I was going to say, we'll make that
happen. We're going to make that happen.
Not anymore, though. JFL's not in the city anymore. That would have been pretty easy to do at the Hyatt.
It's true.
But
he seems like maybe a kind of standoffish guy, which I like.
Maybe.
Which you like?
Sure. He's smart and cool and.
I don't know. I found like
he's
the
not
one,
a
the,
Mr.
The
Hollywood guy.
The guy I could have been that way was like Paul F. Tompkins was like the sweetest man.
Yeah.
And I feel that Paul F. Tompkins could easily just be like no. and not care like about anything that's happening around him, but like
I saw him and his wife eating breakfast when I went to San Francisco. We were staying at the same hotel for Sketchfest, and I for 10 seconds I was like, should I go up and talk to him? But it was breakfast time.
Yeah, I think it's different.
If he was eating lunch, maybe that's different. But I'll leave him to it.
But
and
not
I just
during
looked
breakfast.
At him, and he's so handsome.
I feel like you can always get away with a like oh, hey, big fan, and just move on.
Yeah,
like a little nod, and I think you can always. Get away with that. And, like, obviously, let's start arguing or something.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, I feel if there's, like...
We're not going back to your mother's house. And you're like, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Like,
I really enjoy your work.
Like, my buddy Scott has shook a number of Montreal Canadiens fans and does that. He's just sort of like, hey, big fan. And then just, like, and bails immediately. And he's just sort of like...
Sure.
And he's like, it's great because they're always like... Do I know this? Is this like is this whatever? Because like you go in for the handshake, there's a little bit of familiarity. They will like shake your hand and then you're like big fan. Then you walk away, so like doesn't progress into whatever.
Yeah,
but
he's
like you go in for the handshake and they're like, uh oh, is this somebody? Like it's not just like hey, oh my god, Sakim Koivu. You're just like big fan. And just like I was like that's such a great. I feel that's like I don't know how the athlete feels, but it's like I guess it's like probably innocuous to the athlete. They're like oh. Okay.
Sure.
You're not stopping me for a selfie or whatever. That was fine. That was a handshake. We'll just move on.
Absolutely.
Like at most, it was maybe a mild annoyance.
Speaking of move on, give me this next question. I'm hungry. I like these questions.
Question four is from the Montreal punk rock all-girl trio, Taxi Girls.
Oh.
They wanted to know they asked teacher... But then they expanded it to mentor when we said, like, if it could be a mentor. What teacher or mentor was the most inspiring to you?
Excuse me. God, this is maybe unfortunate. Not much. Never a big school guy, that's for
Andrew
sure.
Said we expanded mentor. It to mentor.
I've always been very alone in this world.
Oh, my God.
I remember I had a Jewish studies teacher. Mm-hmm. Who was not a teacher. It was like an after-school program.
Yeah.
And she was like some young lady who would come in and like teach us what the Haggadah was or whatever. And then I remember her saying on one of the last days, Daniel, you're very funny and not funny for a kid, like funny, funny. And I was like, oh my God, an adult thinks I'm like adult funny.
Yeah, you're like, you're not class clown funny.
That was huge.
You're like,
that was
hey.
Huge, being like, whoa, I can make like adults laugh with like being like, not to say smart, but like I'm not just being like, you know what I mean? I was like, whoa, that was very cool.
And not to say that you wouldn't do that. You're not just doing that. Like that
you know, I can't actually. I don't know how to make a fart sound with my armpit.
It's an absolute
I never learned
mystery
how.
To me. Yeah.
I don't think you can do it when you have hairy armpits. I think there needs to be.
You need to be slick.
I think it's got to be flesh on.
Wow, I've never even considered
that. To make the squirt noise, right? Because there's like I feel that skin on skin. I feel the hair is muffling the whole situation. Why you don't see adults doing it?
Well,
I think for more than one reason, actually. Yeah. There's actually a couple.
I mean, we talked about the state of comedy in the city. Like, I feel that if they could, there'd be some comedians who would.
Yeah, they didn't put me on Just for Laughs. They didn't see my armpit fart bit. It's killer. It worked at the chuckle hole and the fuck factory.
That
was very inspiring. I wish I remembered her name, but I think I was in grade four. So
Miriam.
How old were you in grade four?
Shoshana.
It was Miriam Shoshana.
I knew it.
First and last. But yeah, she was cool.
And then wrapping it up, Dan, Karen, what question do you want to ask our next guest?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I thought about it a little bit, but I didn't come up with anything. Let's say, what question? How about, like...
What's your favorite episode of Everybody Loves Raymond?
That could be. I like when people are negative on themselves. So it might be something like, what's your, something that you did wrong or something embarrassing or like, what's something you can't do that you wish you could?
Oh, that's the question. I can't whistle.
Really?
I can't whistle.
Of any sort. Like the fingers in the mouth.
No,
just
I can't do the fingers in the mouth. I can't do the whew, whew, whew. I can't do none of
that. That was pretty good.
The fingers in the mouth.
Oh, I would love to do the loud, like everyone's attention like whistle. I would love to do
My dad can do that without his fingers.
I have
like,
a buddy.
Like, he can like press his tongue and be like, he used to do that as a kid. Like, and it was like, shrip. And we're all, like, as children, we're like,
guys,
yes, sir.
I'm going to put my mic away. Here's a question. Have you ever seen anyone whistle like this? One person taught me, Adam M. in elementary school. I've asked, I'd say 100 people. Have you ever seen someone whistle like this? Oh, oops. I'll do this. Sorry, listeners.
Whoa.
Ever what? Seen? And I only did it a little bit.
Okay, were you inhaling or exhaling?
Going in. I think it's a mix of the...
Are you, like, you make a... This is
whoa, wait.
He's getting it. Lawrence is getting it.
I'm going to tell you,
Lawrence,
I think
you need to like manipulate the tube.
A lot of people have tried. That's the best. That's one of the best anyone's ever done.
The first one had a little sound, right?
Again, I don't want to do it too loud. It's a good whistle. Keep practicing.
What's something... This is now Lawrence's new hobby.
Yeah.
I am going to do this all day tomorrow.
I'm going to be like,
that is the most unsexy thing. I'll be like, wait until you hear this.
So very quickly, for listeners, how would you describe what I'm doing? I'm pulling my bottom
lip
forward.
So he's pursing his bottom lip into a small U-shape at a 45-degree angle. And then he is inhaling aggressively while keeping a completely dead look in his eyes. Just an absolute serial killer shit above the nose. Just Hannibal Lecter nonsense.
That's what I do to call the women over.
It looks like it's a spell to get people to do what you want. It's like, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Doctor Strange.
No. It looks like a fucking... It looks like someone passed that down through generations. It's unbelievable.
I call forth the lips of Agamotto.
I pass it on to you, Lawrence.
I'm going to... Oh, my God. I'm going to be so bizarre looking at home. Lawrence, can you whistle?
My easy answer is I wish I could play an instrument. Like, I wish I had any...
Are you dexterous?
Pretty dexterous. I'm very good at video games. And, like, punishing video games. Like,
like a Souls guy?
Super Meat Boy.
Oh, God.
Faster, man. I could finger tap, like, I'm sure. Oh. If I, like, knew the skill, I could play Miserloo.
Do some Dragon Slayer?
Yeah, hey, look, I mean...
it's like I've had, and it's very flattering when it happens, but like I've had, and it happened on the last podcast, where like musicians are like, oh, are you a musician? Because you're like so passionate about music and like you're into all this stuff, and I'm like, no. And it like shames me. When I have like talked well enough about music that it felt like a musician is like, oh, you must be a musician because the way you're speaking, and I'm like...
Right.
Like I feel like shame. I'm like, oh no, I'm just the shitty imposter.
What
I'm just a fan.
What instrument do you want to learn?
I mean, like, guitar is the obvious one because you could compose and write a lot of your own stuff on it.
Sure.
I don't think you could really, like, I feel you could, I could, if I was good at guitar, I could play guitar a lot by myself and, like, twiddle through songs and stuff. And I feel it's compartmentalized enough that you can travel with it. Because, I mean, like, the other composing one would be piano because you can write anything on a piano.
True.
So, but that would be it. Like, that would be, I would be like,
two.
I would love to, like,
guitar.
More guitar.
The best of both worlds.
Yeah,
but that's it.
Nature
and, like,
is
those
calling
would be,
you.
Like, those would be, like, the two, because I was like, those are the ones you, like, write music on. And that would be what would be interesting. I wouldn't be like, all right, everybody, here's Wonderwall. I'd be like, no, here's the song I wrote. Like, right. And now everybody.
It's called Wunderwall.
I was just going to say, it so happens to sound like Wunderwall, but
it, you it's might a think title. It's derivative. You'd be wrong.
I wrote it with my brother Liam.
But yeah, that would be it. Would be one of the composing instruments that I would like.
That's just, interesting.
And like with the purpose of. I could use that to write music, whatever that was for. I'm like, I would just be interested in writing music even more so than being like, oh, I want to pack a stadium. I'm like, no, I would just love to be like, here's a song I wrote.
Yeah, here's how I express myself.
Yeah. No,
that's, if only that's we had a way to do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's too late to learn, man. I turned 40 last year.
It's never too late to learn. That's an absolute bullshit answer.
Learn.
No, that's fucking nonsense, bro. I picked up acting last year, and I'm only in the infancy of it, and I fucking love it.
But you were performing well before
so?
That.
It's
I feel
that
you had
a, it's
a you
new
had a,
skill, new craft.
It's a new craft, but I feel that you had a it was a bridge. Like, I feel that picking up acting would be like, I know guitar, now I'm learning bass or whatever. Like, you're a performer.
Yeah, you know, that's what the button mashing was. That was your preamble to doing that to a guitar.
I feel
guitar.
That they are certainly branches of performance.
Right.
Okay. They're different. They're different. Absolutely different disciplines. Okay. Like, I'm not denying that, but I feel you had your foot in the performance.
I think if you put energy into it and you got time. And
I think
of
the role playing game skill tree. They're on a similar branch.
I'm a bard, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'm a bard.
Exactly, that's
okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You can branch out, multiclassing.
So, yeah, multiclassing. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, making its triumphant return. Original lineup.
Heck yeah.
Getting the whole band together.
Original lineup. That's right. Yeah,
so wild.
Evening with ladies and gentlemen, baby.
Mm-hmm.
It was very. We got into Chris Hannaford and I. Mm-hmm. Have been doing comedy for a while together. Mm-hmm. Two man stuff. We did San Francisco Sketch Fest in January.
Which
we
you
had
turned, you,
so
that,
much
they,
fun.
I heard they renamed the city to San Francisco for in
San Dan.
San Dan
Cisco, because we love Cisco.
Yeah.
We were in
who's
thongs,
the third
but not like, but not Drew Hill. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not Drew Hill. No, yeah. No, absolutely not. But I do like Tony.
San Dan Cisco.
But we had a lot of fun in San Dan Cisco.
That's right.
So we decided let's put on more shows. We just one off at Theater St. Catherine, April 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
We're still discussing exactly what the show is. It could be just us for 90 minutes. We might get a little opening act or something.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be hosting. We're going to do our San Francisco set, maybe some new stuff, play a couple games. It's just a fun evening with my favorite comedian, Chris Sandiford.
Mm-hmm.
And also I get to be there as well. Very fun.
And Chris Sandiford's favorite comedian.
Daniel Caron.
Chris
Sandiford. I'm not kidding. I think... That's why we work well together. We do think the other one's very funny. You know, just writing this thing for San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
It's so fun to just sit at a cafe with him at a thing, laughing, suggesting things, go, God, that's stupid. We have to do it. Writing it down.
Man. I also like, I mean, if,
it
and if
really
the listener,
helps.
If the listener is has never been to Ladies and Gentlemen, like, it's...
Ooh.
It's a party. It's very much a party.
It is a party, but yeah. I was going to say, but it's also, like, I've always been impressed by the fact that you guys are, like, equally pretty, like, high energy and silly, but not the samesy.
Right.
Like you're both,
sure.
you're both high energy, silly personas that are not stepping on each other's toes, which is, I'm sure a difficult, like, do you ever write a thing where you're like, no, that's not a me line, that's a Chris line.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it
feels great when it gets an applause break, and I go, ooh, that's my
applause break.
Yeah,
that's my Chris Sandiford.
No, and I'll tell you honestly, I've thought that, I should say I realized this a couple of years ago, there's nothing funner than backing up a crazy thing that Chris said. Like, if he's on stage and he'll say, like, all monkeys... deserve to die. That was the first thought I had.
Sure.
The idea of it's so fun to go, yeah, you're right, Chris, and I'll tell you why. There's nothing is more fun than having his back being insane, because he's pretty insane.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think we have a good wavelength. We think similarly. And then for the times that we don't, we surprise each other. I find, nothing's more fun than justifying a crazy Chris Hannaford idea on
stage. And like I said, also, if we put you off by talking about people who are just there, you guys genuinely always seem like, I don't know if you, like, especially like those Shaker deals, you guys look like you were having a good time. I don't know how much of it was an act. Like, because you were playing to four people who were
I
trying
also,
to do their homework. But, like...
I know. I also don't, if I'm honest, not exactly sure. I'm pretty...
I could never tell. I was like, they look like they're having a blast.
The goal is sincerity. And also, there are times where I definitely have thought, for example, at a Shaika or even at a comedy show, no one's laughed out loud yet. Mm-hmm. I'm going to break this seal. And it's like, technically, I guess, a fake laugh. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I'm like, ha, 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 ha. It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's all kind of blended into each other.
And
but
that's when
no,
you break
I don't
and just
think...
save the scene.
Yeah, there's definitely not like, here, I'll laugh here. And that'll, if this doesn't get a laugh, then I'll just chuckle. And then there's none of that.
Okay.
But maybe there's some subconscious, I don't know, smiling. I don't know. Yeah, I try not to think about it too much.
Yeah.
Because madness that way lies. And...
Anyway, I'm going to predict it. Get your tickets now. Because I think it'll sell out. I think this will be a complete and total sellout.
I mean, even if it doesn't sell out, I hope comedians come and see. You know, I've met a lot of people in the last few years, comedians, who have not only never seen me do stand-up, sketch, don't know what sketch is. You know, there's people I talk to, 22-year-old stand-ups, who are like, what, you're like SNL? And I'm like, yeah, I guess, but no. But so, yeah, I just hope people come see it. It's so fun. Also, he's like a little celeb, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Even in San Francisco, being with him maybe 4 or 5 times, someone go, hey, excuse me, not to be weird, are you that guy from What We Do in the Shadows? And he go, yes. And then a lady would unbutton one button on her shirt. And I go, okay, I'm going to go for a walk. I'll let Chris deal with that. So, yeah, I forget that he's like a mini celeb, you know. He's still the same old fool that I lived with.
But now he's shredded.
When I met him, he was... You're
thin.
Right. I mean,
he
not...
He was thin. He wasn't shredded.
He was not shredded. You're right. And, yeah, he's certainly shredded. And, yeah, it irritates me. I'll be honest. No, it's great. It's great.
You're like, I lost some weight and I felt really good about myself.
Yeah.
Chris Andrews getting in Marvel shape.
It's true. Absolutely accurate.
Yeah.
He's taking beach selfies. He's like ready to fight Thanos and shit. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna say it now. It's gonna be a funny show.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be guaranteed laughs. April 2nd, 8:30. Doors open at 8. Tuesday, which is a nice kind of off day. I like it. A quiet day, you know.
But it's reminiscent of your Shaika days.
Exactly. I thought that too. A little Tuesday night.
It's an Easter egg for the OGs.
Exactly. That yeah. I did unfortunately think that. I like a nice Tuesday night, ladies and gentlemen.
Dan, is there anything else you want to shout out? We talked about the show. We talked about the
other
show.
Oh, my God. No, thank you so much. I'm sorry this was delayed. I'm going to get a better internet provider. No, I'm not.
I think it was your computer. I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't your.
Yeah, it's old. I took it in. Apparently, it's a vintage.
Ooh.
That's how old I've. That's how long I've had this.
So you're like, it's getting more valuable. You're like, oh, you got to preserve this.
That's so funny. That's true.
It's a collector's item.
Yeah. No. Anyway.
Thanks
so
much.
I was so happy to be here. Thank you both. You're both mensches. And I'm sorry if I got you sick.
If you got it sick, I'll never forgive you. any closing words? Anything you want to shout out?
No.
All right. Bye.
Hey there, loyal listener who listens to the show all the way past the closing credits. Thank you for listening to Go Plug Yourself. We really, really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, I cannot stress this enough, please tell people about it. We don't really have a budget for marketing or fancy Facebook ads or putting up billboards on the street. We really have to rely on word of mouth, which basically means that if you listen to the show and you enjoy the show, please share it, link it, tell your friends about it. Say, hey, there's this show called Go Plug Yourself. They talk to Montrealers or people that have stuff going on in Montreal or just people that have stuff to promote that we kind of care about. We can go outside of Montreal if we want to. So just tell people about the show. It's a fun show. We like doing it a lot. We've done it for over 200 episodes, and it's in large part thanks to support from people like you. If you want to support the show at all, you can go to patreon.com/9to5cc and throw a couple bucks our way. It really helps with the hosting fees. For the most part, we're really not trying to make a profit on this. And also, if you want want to be a guest on the show, or you know someone who might want to be a guest on the show, you can contact us either on Facebook or on Twitter. There's a bunch of ways to find us, and let us know. And if the scheduling and the timing and everything works out, maybe you can be the next person who comes on the show and plugs something. Big thank you, as always, to Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude, who provided our theme songs. And, of course, a thank you to all of the hosts that we have on the show. Walter J. Ling, who technically retired but still sometimes hosts, Christopher Vendito, Lawrence Korber, and Ines Anaya are all amazing co-hosts, and you should support them and their comedy and all of that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for choosing Go Plug Yourself as one of your from the millions of podcasts, and have a beautiful day. Thank you.
905.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.